the Vox Markets Podcast.
Hello there. Welcome to Ticket Stock. It's Tuesday, the 25th of July, 2023. Here's something depressing for you, John. 5 months till Christmas.
Thanks, Justin.
Christmas Day.
That's exactly what I need to think about at the moment.
I wonder if we'll have a Santa rally this year. You know? Oh, we long for that. I could rally for years. In fact, I do honestly think that we're off the bottom here. I genuinely think that. You know, it's looking good. And in fact, there's an article today we'll cover in the top business stories about saying that pretty much is recession is less likely. Mm. But first and foremost, let's look at the. I always like to just check out the other. Do you know what? It's like when you sort of. You know, have most of my stocks are small. I've got a fund and all that stuff, but I do find FTSE 100 companies quite boring. And it's like if you support a football team, you don't care about other teams really. They're too much, do you? But anyway, the FTSE, it's up a fifth of 1%. FTSE 250 down a little bit. So there we are.
That rise on you, Lee, is not too boring. I have to say,
yeah,
good news for me because it's my biggest holding.
Is it your holding? Yeah. It's nice to see that. But can you get excited about big stocks, though?
I mean, it depends what you're after. I'm not necessarily after excitement. I'm after returns.
I suppose returns are exciting, I suppose, a little bit.
It's done very well for me, Unilever. I mean, let's have a look. I mean, I've held it for a year or so. It's up about 15-20%.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's not too bad, and you know it's proved very defensive, and we'll talk about its numbers in a minute. But I don't find it boring. I don't find large companies.
Yeah, I find that defensive boring. In fact, there's a story about Unilever later on. We'll cover that as well. But marvelous stuff. Let's start off with it. By the way, if you want to comment, please comment. If you can hit that subscribe button on YouTube, that'd be very good. We're nearing sort of 3,000 subscribers. It's growing nicely, steadily but nicely. So if you can hit that, if you haven't subscribed, please do that. Much appreciated. And if you have, and you want to shout out, we'll give you a shout out. It's like a radio station here.
But
and talking about that, a few comments yesterday, okay? Alistair says, thank you for acknowledging that Ondo do not have funding issues, as you apparently now recognise. That's a little dig there, isn't it? As you apparently now
subtle.
I didn't say that at all. I said I want to see the financial statements, if full year results are out this week. I want to see them.
I think what you suggested was something that many small companies have a problem with, and that is scaling up.
The news flow is great, but it costs money to scale up, and so I want to see. I mean, the restructuring, the convertible loan notes are very good. They raised money a few months back, £800,000, not enough really, plus warrants on top of that, but still short term. You want to see how much they're burning, because they did burn about £2 million for 6 months first half. But Alistair gives us a bit of advice here. He said the key to achieving multi-bagger gains on the small number of outstanding small tech stocks is to do your research early and start building your stake before the herd arrives.
I couldn't agree more about the research part of that. I think I talked about that this week. I think you've got to be prepared to put in the legwork, dig around, triangulate. So, there's a guy called a famous investor called Philip Fisher, and he advised an approach called scuttlebutt. And what that essentially meant was you go and talk to as many people as you possibly can. You find information from wherever you can get it. Suppliers, customers, employees, not just what you hear through the RNS. And you go out and you form a picture of the company by triangulating all this information. And that's what gives you the sort of comfort factor to know that you've perhaps found something that's a little bit special. So, yeah, would definitely advocate lots of research. I'm not so bothered about early. I don't think getting to things early is necessarily, a must. I think you can come to things quite late and still make a very, very good return. We've seen that with some of the big tech stocks over in the US.
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, there are exceptions to this. But do you know what? I sort of agree on, if you're looking at microcaps, you have to be a little bit early because, a small amount of volume can move them, significantly in a short space of time. And if you, and generally when I've looked for microcaps, you're talking sub 20 million IM or nanocaps. I call that nanocaps now. Microcaps is a little bit above that. But nanocaps can really move and you can find some. But like I said, but if you look at just the mathematics of it all, you know, it's very easy for a company with a 5 million market cap to double to 10 million. And it gets harder and harder, of course, the bigger it gets. So that's the thing. If you want to find a multi-bagger, then you've got to sort of fish in those areas. They're higher risk, but a higher reward, but also the rises may not be sustainable because they may need funding issues. And that may take the momentum away from them.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you might refer to as the law of large numbers. But, you know, we have seen, as I said, you know, going back to US tech, you know, the likes of Apple and Google and Amazon, you know, they've you know, multi-billion companies that have just got even bigger. So you can multi-bag from very, very large market caps, for sure, you know. But so the law of large numbers doesn't always hold true, but you've got to be in the right place.
Yeah.
And you know, I do accept that it's very easy, much easier to do that from a very small position. But as I say, I'm just never too fussed about getting early. I'd rather see the uptrend in place before I dived into anything. And I'd rather see, you know, there's some solid numbers behind it. So, I appreciate the point, but it's just not the way I would approach things.
No, uptrends are very important, especially in a bear market or coming out of a bear market, if you are, because, you know, you can have many sort of fake breaks and it'll come back down lower. You can do so. Momentum and uptrends are very important, and if you stick to that, and it just took me a while, sort of, you know, to be disciplined enough to stick to that. By the way, Mike says yesterday, good fun. The Ramper guy, that's no way to talk about John. The Ramper guy always gives me a chuckle every time I watch.
Well, at least he didn't call me.
I don't think you're a ramper, John. I don't think you're a ramper.
Thanks, John.
Comment below, actually. Have you ever had a multi-bagger? If you have, you know, what was it? When was it? And your biggest loss? What is it? Let me know. Have you ever had a multi-bagger? That means, I'd say, multi-bagger, was it, say, 200% maybe? That's a multi-bagger.
Yeah, 200%.
Yeah. Let me know what it is below in the comments. And also, a little poll before we go on. What is the best time? If you're watching this on playback, what is the best time for this to go live? When can you catch up? Is it like lunchtime? Do you know, too early or too late? But, you know, 12 to 1, 1 till 2, what would be the best time? It's up to you. Let's look at the front page of Vox here. We've got a bit of content, John. In fact, we've both done a bit of content today. I recorded an interview with Greg Madison of Shield Therapeutics. Good numbers in there. They're growing quarter on quarter by 50%. 15,000 prescriptions for Accrufer, of course, which is orally taking sort of iron deficiency tablets. But they're doing very well, and they seem to be heading in the right track.
Yeah, we spoke about them the other day. It's some really, really strong numbers there for that product.
Look at Brent crude. By the way, just going off piece a bit here, but it's breaking up above this previous support level. You can see there, it was hovering around sort of $80, broken up now to 82. Now, inflation numbers are looking good, but if that starts kicking up again, we're in a bit of a problem here. There's lows here down at sort of $72, broke it above that there. And I was there, but let's have a quick look.
Luckily, I got my heating oil in order. At the bottom of that, so buy heating oil in summer. There's a tip for you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the same thing. Are we storing gas now? Because it's cheap. But look at that. That's Shield Therapeutics. So you can see there, you know, from a downtrend, massive downtrend, from all the way up here, and then it's hit this level at pretty much what six pence, and it's bounced on that for months, from July last year, for a year of trading in a range. You can see how people get shaken out, they get bored, and all of a sudden, it's sort of broken out on that update they did last week. And so you may see the end of a downtrend there. Maybe it may take a while. I know a seller came in, I think, and let me just check that. I think there was a holdings thing yesterday, but I'm sure a big holder. So there we are, holdings. So who is this? This is Jupiter Fund. So they've taken a little bit off the table there. Down to 4.7. So maybe that's the reason why it's come back a little bit on that. But there we are. But good news anyway. John, what have you been covering? HVivo, isn't it?
HVivo, yeah. I spoke to Mo Khan about the latest human challenge model for influenza B, this one. Yeah. It's quite interesting. You know, flu is as Mo told me, you know, it's an intelligent virus, you know, constantly mutating. It's very, very hard. We as a society have found it very, very hard, and the pharmaceutical industry, to develop vaccines that, you know, certainly not universal vaccines. And it's very hard. There's different forms of flu, influenza A, influenza B, And this one's quite, this one's, it's very hard to distinguish between the two in a sort of live environment. So the human challenge model is designed to really help them target this very, very specific strain of flu, influenza B. It's the only way you can really do it. And it's, you know, it's a huge contract. It's 13 a bit billion over billion, million.
Wow, I was going to say, it's actually risen by more than that.
That would be nice. over the next couple of years, recognised over the next couple of years, and with an existing client. And I think that's a very important fact. You know, as Mo told me, you know, not only are clients coming back who they're working with, but the contracts are getting bigger. And I think this really sort of, you know, speaks volumes about the approach that hVIVO is taking. The industry is really recognizing that the power of these human challenge models to help them accelerate, you know, the development of treatments, vaccines or you know, antivirals. And in many cases, you know, a lot of the things that it's developing these models for, there aren't really any effective treatments. So you know, really, really, really important stuff that's going on here. Have a look at the interview, and there's an article up on the site as well. But yeah, it's really, really good news for the company. Shares up a little bit. I must say at this point that you know, whilst I like large companies, I do like this company, and I hold a few shares.
Oh, there we are. There we are. There's transparency, bit of disclosure there.
Well, you've got to be transparent.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to talk about a company I hold. There's no secret to that, though. According to Mike and the Ramper, I haven't ramped anything, have I? Really? You haven't said anything yet.
No. I really don't think, you know, when I say I like this company, you know, that I'm in ramping territory here because I own them. But, you know, you just look at the numbers. Order book last year's, you know, 76 million, you know, huge amounts of cash in the bank, and, you know, really very much you know, approaching profitability. You know, it's obviously taken a, what are we looking at? So I'm just having a look at the forecasts.
Just look at the chart there. You look at the forecast. Look at the chart here. You see it's a wedge here, but you see the bouncing. It's, you know, hit the top of the frame, yeah. It's coming down. It's staying above the 200-day moving average, which is quite nice. Dip below there, and now it's pumped above the 50-day moving average. But you know, what I look for that is basically a previous high. Is it beating the previous high? It needs to get, you know, above these previous highs, hopefully. But it seems to be, you know, going. It's settling down almost. You can see a series of higher lows a little bit here, and so it needs to consolidate. But
proper company, been, you know, been on the cusp of a pre-tax profit for a couple of years. That's, you know, it's kind of measure I like to use as a marker of profitability. But next year, looking at these forecasts, pre-tax five and a half, near enough. Sorry, six, in fact. EPS 0.8p. So you know, we're looking at some serious growth here.
Yeah.
So they're not hugely expensive.
107 million, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it's a. It's getting into sort of a small cap territory. So that's hVIVO.
There's one other company that we haven't looked at the moment. It's not, the article's not been published yet, but it's called Diacutics.
Right.
And they've had a very strong trading update out today. Shares up about six and a bit percent. And this basically provides sort of back end technology for the sort of aggregation of diagnostic results. And it's really important, used by, you know, lots of big pharma clients. And really, again, this is all about this sort of data coming in that can then, you know, power the industry, power their, you know, give them more and more knowledge. And then, you know, overlaying that with sort of technologies such as artificial intelligence to you know, really power that analysis. You know, things
we just... What are they called again?
Diacutics. Ticker is DXRX.
Diacutics.
What I like about these sort of companies is that, you know, I call them picks and shovels. So, you know, obviously you can invest in companies that are developing the drugs themselves, or you can invest in companies, and this is what I would prefer to do, that are actually providing the tools that companies use to make the, you know, to develop these drugs. And yeah, this is my little basket of healthcare picks and shovels. This is definitely worth another look.
Picks and shovels are really, they are more stable and more visibility of earnings, because there's always the industry there. But they're That suits you, John, actually. Sensible.
Boring.
John, picks and shovels. No, I'll just say, you know, no, they're sensible because they're always going to be needed. It's like, you know, going back to the old Gold Rush days, they said the people that really got well off there consistently were the guys with the stores selling all the equipment, weren't they?
Yep.
Very few people actually struck gold. But if you're selling the equipment to all those people, well, I'm going to get rich. And that's a bit like AIM, really. It's, you know, it is a lot of people going to AIM, look for these sexy breakneck stocks, but end up breaking the bank. And you realize if you have a sensible backbone to your portfolio, you probably do a lot better. And if you get the odd winner, one or two winners on you know, microcaps, minor caps, then that'll add to it.
Yeah.
But it's a game. Okay. So winners are N. Paul Farmer. I don't know. I interviewed Nigel on the podcast a long time ago, but basically a patent grant and board change there. And the University of Queensland has informed the company that has now been notified by the US patent attorney of the grant of its further patent application in relation to Nuvec in the United States. So there we go. I mean, in fact, it's one of the winners today, but let's look at the chart on this because I can imagine this is a bit volatile. This is one of these. It's well followed, this company, and so you can see there. You know, there's amazing. This is a typical example. Amazing rallies in this. You know, going from literally 1.4 up to 3.5. That's a multi-bagger right there. But then all of a sudden, a couple months later, it's almost back to 1.4 again. You know, so you've got to be careful in those. You know, you can have big rises, but are they sustainable? And so you can see there, that's from an all-time low, pretty much. So this rally today is up 34%. It's from an all-time low, you know, but so it is hard to sort of do it. Losers, One Disco. Now, in the comments, please, what does this company do? Do you hold any shares in it? And when did you buy the shares? Because literally, they've restoration to AIM. Let's look at the chart on this, because they were when they were suspended, because one of the sales executives.
It's quite a chart. This.
Exaggerate, say, yes, sir. Look at that. When they're suspended, which is up here at 13 quid, was it one of the sales execs exaggerating the figures or something?
It was something like that, yeah.
Yeah,
it was something like
and,
that.
And now, down this red dot down here, that's where they've opened today. So from £13 to 50 pence, and they've raised $30 million at 50 pence.
We knew that was happening. We spoke about that. Maybe last week, and we knew this horrendous chart was on the way. People seem to be buying today. Some people seem to be buying. I mean,
you're averaging down, hopefully. But it's nuts. Look at that. The rise, the volume wasn't huge, but look at the big volume before. On the day 25th of, that's today's volume. Yeah, so buys and sells. Massive volume today, 4.6 million. But do we know what they do? It's big data, isn't it?
It's data, you know. So my understanding was that, you know, companies, you know, have multiple instances of data servers, whatever, around the world, or certainly within the cloud now. And it's just making sure that everything is sort of synced. So, you know, it's if I post something, you know, here, it's syncing with all my devices over there. As I said the other day, I don't fully understand why there is a separate space in the market for this company. You would have thought this was something that the cloud developers were doing for themselves, but it's a disaster zone. I mean, they announced the contract the other week for $7,500. It's like, wow. Why are we announcing this?
They valued something over $1 billion, wasn't it, at one point? Or was it close to $1 billion? I think it was. In fact, it was $900 million pretty much. And I didn't get the valuation. I was asked to look at these and do it a few months back and say, can you look at One Disco rising? And you notice that the interest in companies rise with the share price. And you know, doing research and getting early is a good thing. But, you know, after it's risen by several hundred percent, you think, is it worth it now? But it's always worth having a look, because it may still be undervalued. But I didn't see any value in this at all. And I thought, what the heck? I don't understand it. But I still understand that this cloud, that cloud, multiple clouds, you choose. At One Disco, we make it easy for you to move petabytes of data in record time to or between any cloud, anytime you want, with zero downtime. How big a market is that?
Well, I mean, it's huge. I mean, you know, the world is powered
by
data.
But why do you want to move it between the clouds? Have you got your business account with, for example, Amazon, AWS, or whatever? Why would you need to move it between the clouds so often? I don't understand.
What I would say is that, you know, despite the fact that the cloud exists, there are a lot of legacy systems out there.
I suppose so, yeah.
You know, managing data and making sure, as I said, that data is always synced is very important.
It's what
this company, as I understood it, was doing.
One of the originals of that, though, weren't they? They were big data, and then get the clouds and all this. They saw, you know, that the power of big data, I suppose, you know, in the AIM area, in the small cap area. But if anyone's watching this and you know exactly, in fact, in a sentence, sell it to me, because to me, on the front page of their website, I still don't get it. And I think if you can't sell a business, you know, in a sentence, I don't, you know, it's hard to understand. If you can't make someone understand it, how do they? Maybe that's part of the appeal. It's a bit too erudite, too, you know. So anyway,
I can't remember. There's a famous investor. I can't remember who exactly it is. I'm not sure it is Warren Buffett, but he just said, you know, if you can't understand, can't explain a business in, you know, one line, then yeah. Avoid.
Well, yeah. Do you know what I'm amazed at? Apart from, you know, investing, I think Buffett and Munger should just release books on quotes. I don't know if they're all attributed to them. I don't know if they are theirs, but some of the quotes are amazing.
Just go and read their letters, their annual Berkshire Hathaway shareholder letters. They're all online, and they are a fascinating read. You can learn, you know, incredible amounts from them. And then obviously people have gone away and written books analysing all those letters. You can read those
made,
as well.
Made but, money off those.
No, exactly. But just read the letters. They're mind blowing.
Yeah, so the one thing that sticks out to me is about that is about investing and difficulty investing. And I think I don't know which one to say, Munger or Buffett, but say, you know, investing is not like Olympic diving. You don't get points for difficulty. You know, keep it simple. So you see companies, if you can't understand it, it's too complex, then move on. There's plenty of other opportunities out there, you know. So most followed companies. Here we go. A bit of Mike, a bit of ramping for you. I hold this stock. I've held it for a while. I don't know how much ramping is. If you share, I posted this video about the new CEO of Destiny's Pharma, and someone said, "Then your ramps come to fruition." I thought, "What are you talking about ramps? I'm sharing information. If there's anything in that video that isn't factual, point it out to me, because I'm not ramping." You know, every forecast is by the broker. Everything I've covered in there is factual, so it's not like. So it's just sharing information, and people say, "Oh, don't." But anyway, this is obviously a new CEO was promoted. They've got sort of the big guns in there. These guys have got a lot of experience for a sub sort of 30 million market cap company, and that's because the assets are very good. I do believe that. Like I said, new chairman, or he's a returning chairman, many years ago, he invested in this company, Sir Nigel Rudd. And if you read about him, there's a lot of criticism about him online, but because he's quite ruthless and he gets deals done. And he's done lots of deals. He's been a deputy chairman of Barclays Bank. He's running Heathrow. So big companies he's run. He's worth about apparently he's worth about 70 million, but he does boast a bit, and he said, "I've never ever left a chairman position where the share price has been lower than when I started." And he said here basically that there's $2 billion of value in XF73 alone. That's their second asset, their wholly owned asset. They've already done deal on one, and so I just think it's very impressive. Him and Chris Tovey, the new CEO, who's chief operating officer of GW Pharma, taken over by Jazz Pharmaceuticals for $7.2 billion. And every company he's worked for has been a multi-billion pound, you know, biotech company. And he's operated at high levels from GSK to UCB. They're all big companies. And now he's the CEO. And you've got this chairman as well. Those are two very big guns for a micro-cap stock. And I mean, there's only one reason why that's there. It's not because they're getting paid a lot of money there, because the company hasn't got a lot of money. It's because the assets. They believe in the assets. And I think they're going to, you know, there's lots of potential there. You know?
There was a very interesting observation I saw from a guy called Justin Urquhart-Stewart, who I'm sure most of our listeners will be aware of. He said, Sir Nigel Rudd basically takes up roles at businesses where he can pick up significant shareholdings that will give him a windfall. His track record has been gaining the chairmanship of businesses where there's likely to be a corporate action, usually a sale, which means he'll be a swift beneficiary. Quite often, you'll see he's a lightning rod for corporate transactions to be carried out. So there you go.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And he did, Justin did want to criticize him, saying almost he goes in there too fast and tries things out too fast. But to be honest, Destiny Farmer, the reason why the last CEO went, I think it's because the share price hit an all-time low. And things were getting done, but the share price wasn't reacting, partly because of the bear market, I suppose. But I think now with this big asset, their biggest asset, they want to get a proper deal done and not get shortchanged on it. So they bring in two guys in with huge amount of experience who are not going to get pushed around in the boardroom or, you know, are quite confident getting it done.
Yeah.
But... anyway, most red RNS is from Greatland Gold. Have you had any dealings with Greatland Gold, John? It's not your area, really, is it?
I haven't. Gold is interesting. Gold is interesting. You know, I wrote something about it the other day for a freelance job. But it's done well. Have you got the gold price? Now, see, look at that. Okay,
That's Greatland Gold. But let me get the gold price up here. Hang on a sec. Commodities, where is it? There we go.
So you've got this very strange situation at the moment where, you know, the gold price is rising and gold miners are falling.
Yeah.
You know, gold is, some people love gold, you know, it's the ultimate safe haven, you know, protects from inflation, protects from the ongoing debasement of fiat currencies. You know, it's been a store of value for thousands and thousands of years. You know, there is a strong argument that as portfolio ballast, I talked about this the other day in respect of sort of large caps, but actually portfolio ballast, you know, just to sort of, what did I write in the piece? You know, imagine your portfolio is a boat and you're in a stormy sea and the gold is your ballast that sort of holds the ship steady, when seas are rough. You know, you can't be in growth because, you know, the winds are too strong. There's always a case for owning gold. It's very strange that gold miners are performing so badly. I can only think it's down to cost and inflation. The production costs
all in sustaining costs for a lot of gold miners is around about $1,000, isn't it? So more than that actually sometimes. So but this level, this should be good margin. It could be 1,500, depends how efficient you are. But if you're a low, you know, cost producer, it shouldn't be a problem because, you know, we are at close to pretty much highs here. You know, has it been high? Well, you know, back in 2011, it's almost a lag. It did rally. Someone said something about gold of the day, and it made a lot of sense about it doesn't rally on the worry of low interest rates. It's a devaluation of everything else. I don't know what it was, but it's very intelligent.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
It's so intelligent, it can't stay in my head.
Well, you see, you can make the case for owning gold, whether we're in an inflationary environment or a low inflation environment, because your gold obviously doesn't pay a coupon. Yeah. You know, there's no dividends. There's no income to be had from gold. And therefore, you know, when interest rates are high, the case, you know, and on risk, essentially risk-free assets like government bonds, then there's no point owning gold because gold isn't paying a coupon. A risk-free government bond is paying you 5 or 6%.
Again, Buffett said Buffett's not a big fan of gold, is he?
Well, Buffett doesn't like gold because he calls it unproductive, and this is true. Yeah. You know, gold isn't like an equity. You know, it's not creating value by creating products or services. There's no compounding effect behind it. You know, and actually, if you look over very long periods, you know, say 100 odd years, gold has underperformed, you know, stocks by quite a significant percent. But actually, if you look at a more recent history, gold and equities are not too far apart. And a lot of people put this down to the fact that, you know, since the US came off the gold standard in the early 70s, you've basically opened a door for volatility in financial markets, complexity. And with that complexity comes the risk of further volatility. Therefore, owning gold is essentially your safe haven from that.
Yeah, can I say, I love analogies, right? But if you're in a boat in stormy seas, I wouldn't want to have a lot of gold on board. It's quite heavy.
Well, that's the point. So, no, that's the point.
You'd sink the boat.
No, it wouldn't sink the boat. That's physics. It wouldn't sink the boat. It stops the boat rocket. Anyway, I'm not going to get into sailing.
All right. Yeah. So Greatland Gold, it's always been a bit of hype around this. The RNS is, doesn't matter what, there's certain companies, because they've rallied strongly in the past, that they're well followed, and even a lot of people have bought into them, a lot of people maybe underwater on them, but still hold the hope that'll get back to previous highs. Grilling Gold is one of those. It may get back to previous highs, but Aviron is the thing that was, you know, basically kicked off all the excitement. But as you can see here, when you get a company go from literally 1.4 pence up to 37 pence, it garners a lot of interest because it's a kind of, you know, wealth-creating stock. You can do very well. If you manage to get in down here at these levels when news came out and rolled it up, I don't know if anyone does really, but if you manage to do that, then you've done very well. But look at where it's gone back since. It's literally at 38 quid. It's now back to 7 quid.
It's a bit, that period in late 2020 was a very, very strange time on the markets. Yeah, you know, there was a lot of money floating around. Because you know, people were being furlough'd and, you know, not able to spend anything. So a lot of money did find its way into the markets. That was particularly true in the US. So, you know, I know, you know, we want to see the history of these things, but that period, I think, you know, you can almost discount it from history. It's just so strange.
Right, so I put an alert on Gritland Gold. In my mind, it's got to close significantly above 9 pence. Maybe even, let's move that up a bit, actually. When it starts to get above, it's only 7 now. Of course, it'll be a good rally. There's a spike there, look, above 9.3 pretty much. The spike there has got above that. If it gets above that, then a new trend will start. May take a while, but...
I mean, really, just needs to get some gold out the ground, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, basically.
Yeah. So essentially, in Scallywag, the exploration and heavier in development date. So Scallywag is the exploration. I think diamond drilling has been completed. Mm. But in Aviron, decline development, significant progress continues with total development to date now at 2,500 meters. We've covered that. HVivo. Let's look at some of the business stories here. So we said about Unilever and Marmite's makers' profits soar as regulator looks for evidence of grocery greed. The company behind many popular consumer brands, being Marmite, Magnum Ice, the surge in profits. They've also includes Domestos, Hellmann's, but they reported a 20% rise in net profits of 3.9 billion euros and over the first half, and this is the first half. It's amazing, is it, selling all those kind of brands that can amass that kind of net profit, 3.1 in 6 months.
Yeah,
selling Marmite and Magnum, they got a lot more, of course. Underlying a price growth for the second quarter was 9.4%, while underlying sales volumes fell. So hang on a sec.
This is quite interesting. This is the interesting bit. Mm. So basically, the growth has come through price. You know, it's been able to put its prices up. It's done that, you know, a couple of times now. But you know, what we look for in large companies like this, large consumer goods companies, their ability to pass those price increases on without losing volume.
The ability to secretly rip off consumers and pretend they're not doing greedflation, is that right?
Well, I mean, I mean, maybe.
But you know what? It's there, right?
A tub of Ben and Jerry's is pretty punchy, about over a fiver a lot of the time. But it's great margin stuff, and these brands, people want them, you know.
So their margins hadn't grown, but and the net profits got reported like 20% rise in net profits. So then, from 3.9. Anyway, so the margins, it's all about the, so that's so Sky here, but another browser. They say their margin, where is it? The margin must have done better. I don't know. Can you see margins there? Margins,
No, it's...
Underlying operating margin stood at 7. Oh, there we are. So the margins hasn't changed at all.
Yeah, so, but their top line's grown. You know, they've successfully passed price increases on and a little bit more. So, you know, there you go, regulators. There's a little bit of evidence, but this is what these companies are supposed to do. I mean, their primary responsibility is not to, you know, their customer who's buying a tub of Ben and Jerry's. It's to me, the shareholders. Yeah, this is the way shareholder capitalism works. They're doing their job. Their responsibility under the law is to put their shareholders first.
It's
true.
I know. But what I like is that on one hand, you know, people shouting, "Oh, you're putting your prices up!" You know, greedflation. I think, well, do you own some shares in Unilever? Yes, well, shut up then.
Yeah, well, the thing is, you know, I'm not saying this is right, and I do actually think.
But I do quite enjoy it. I'm up 15%.
But this is the way shareholder capitalism works. This is what it is about. And if anyone's got a problem with that, then you know, then that's a question for politicians, and you know, not Unilever. You know, this is what its management are paid to do.
Here we go. This is from City AM. Okay. UK recession risk just got a whole lot lower after inflation undershot. And it's the first time the ONS calculations have been undershot analyst forecasts since January's numbers. In fact, just 6 of the last 18 inflation prints have come in lower than market expectations, according to calculations by investors. But they're saying essentially, like I said yesterday, we're seeing now bad news is actually good for the market, because this bad news particularly is about slowing economy. And we know the markets are priced in, you know, a sort of recession, and also we've got high interest rates. So the Bank of England now is saying, okay, listen, it's working. What we're doing is working. Let's pause a little. Let's see what's going to happen. Is it tomorrow or Thursday? Thursday, we've got data out, haven't we, on the thing. We'll see what's going to happen, you know, and will they push interest rates up? Because if it's starting to work, and it's his first real evidence that it's starting to work, maybe they won't. So that means it's good for the markets. All the markets need to know, is inflation not getting worse? And if it's not, then the Bank of England won't have to force up interest rates any further, which, of course, is good for the market. And again, you know, look at this. O2 Virgin laying off more jobs. And, of course, that will feed into the economy, less people spending, and it's slowing down a bit. But it's just, I think, you know, we have to realise the difference between the economy and the market. And bad news at the moment, economically, is good news for the market.
Yeah, telecoms is a tough old market anyway. There's a lot of big changes going on there, a lot of consolidation. I think Vodafone in the UK is teaming up with Three. You know, their numbers last week, well, they weren't wonderful, but the, you know, the market sort of seems to like them. You know, I mean, the job losses are, I mean, a lot of those, I think, pre-planned. BT said the same, you know, big numbers of jobs coming out of BT, but a lot of those are to do with the coming to an end of its fibre rollout.
Yeah.
Telecoms. Okay. I don't really like this market.
No, I mean, okay, so that's it. We're just looking at, finally looking at the sort of most followed there, most read. You got each of you. U Group doing very well again. Very good growth there from U Group. And that's, you know, amazing stock. There's a chart of that. Bonhill, which is a holdings company, Ember Pharma, a bit of a fundraiser. Losers here, it's got to be, you know, One Disco, Pierre Brighton.
Ectech there is doing nicely. They've got a nice little trading update out today, a contract announced today. Yeah. Really interesting. Definitely worth a look. It's sort of energy from waste.
Yeah.
So nicely in the sort of renewables theme. There's a couple of companies that I also noticed that I'm going to be taking a look at very shortly. Pebble and Aptitude. And, you know, this sort of follows hot on the heels of the S4 capital profit warning. We talked about how, you know, marketing budgets were under a little bit of pressure, and especially digital marketing budgets. These companies do, I mean, promotional products, you know, your logo on this mug type thing. And this market, I find it extraordinary. There never seems to be any let up in demand for people who want to put their logo on a mug or a pen or a stress ball or whatever it is.
I suppose that's a cheaper way. I mean, is it a cheaper way of marketing yourselves and promoting yourselves as opposed to taking out big adverts, digital advertising, all that stuff? It's maybe a better way of doing it, a more effective way of doing it.
Yeah,
you know, a mug. If you give someone a nice mug with your logo on it or pens, they'll have it for 6 months, 12 months, you know, whatever. A mug for maybe a year or so. I think it's a promotional gift that keeps on giving, you know?
I think it's worth a look. And I say that because, you know, I look back, look across the market, and there's a company called 4 Imprint. It's quite a big company now. It's one and a quarter billion market cap. And again, it's in the promotional products space. And this company's performance over the years, you know, take the COVID aberration aside, it is a straight line up of sales and profits. Promotional products, that's where it's at when it comes to marketing.
Well, we need to get some mugs off them. So we're sitting here drinking mugs and stuff.
Get some swag. We need some merch for the show.
Yeah, marvelous stuff. I tried to get down to half an hour, but didn't manage to do it. It's John's fault. He talks too much. speak tomorrow. Let's take a stock. Thanks for tuning in. And like I said, let us know if you're watching this on catch up. What time would you prefer it live? Because we're thinking 11 is quite an awkward time, but is lunchtime better? Let us know in the comments. Cheers. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Speak next, I was going to speak next week, speak tomorrow.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.